And at this time, if you are ready to proceed on the next case, which is where Lennar is the appellant, it's case number 65510. Mr. Schumacher, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you, Robert Schumacher and Megan Hummel for Lennar Vino LLC. In this instance, the appellant.
Let me see right here.
This is an appeal by Lennar of an order at the district court level denying a motion to compel arbitration and stay proceedings. The order should be reversed on two grounds. The district court erred when it found that Lennar, because of the doctrine of latches, was barred from seeking to enforce the arbitration provision. Second, the district court erred when it found that Lennar, by participating principally in the Chapter 40 process and by engaging in active settlement negotiations, thereby waived its right to enforce the arbitration provision subsequent to completion of the Chapter 40 process. In so doing, the district court relied on the Nevada Gold and Casinos, Inc. standard, which asserts three elements of waiver: that Lennar knew of its right to arbitrate, that Lennar acted inconsistently with that right, and that the respondents were prejudiced by Lennar's actions. The second two of those components cannot be met here. I would suggest to this court, and we argued this at the district court level, that it would be contrary, manifestly contrary to public policy, to find or issue a ruling that by engaging in the Chapter 40 process, the pre-litigation process of site inspections, exchange of documents, mediations, that somehow any of that conduct, collectively or singly, could even be considered as an act that would be inconsistent with the right to arbitrate, an act that would be considered in a determination of whether there was a waiver of the right to compel arbitration.
Let me ask you a hypothetical question, because I think that the dilemma you posed up is interesting. And Chapter 40 has had some strong left turns and even some U-turns in its process and the court's interpretation thereof. But would it not have been better to say or to draft something that says we engage in the Chapter 40 pre-litigation proceedings notwithstanding the agreements that we have set forth in our contracts related to arbitration? I mean, that would clearly signal the plaintiff in this case that you're not waiving any rights, they wouldn't be biased or prejudiced in any way, and in fact they'd be on notice that certain devices and discovery that would be available to them under Chapter 40 might not be available to them under arbitration, but everybody's on even footing that way.
And that's exactly what Lennar did. I refer the court to the purchase agreement. The site to the appellate record is 2JA.
Which version, Mr. Schumacher?
Purchase agreement, it's either one or two. So,
thank you.
In it, and I will quote, the purchase agreement states the following. The purchase agreement, any preliminary steps required under state law before commencing arbitration, including Chapter 49, that's not the verbatim part, shall not be construed to constitute a waiver of arbitration. And then I sort of mangled that quote, so let me indicate that I paraphrased.
And you argued that to Judge Flanagan.
The briefs are confusing here for me as to which is which, but you have Lennar Reno's answer to the petition for writ. I know it's in the other case, but what you call the first version, paragraph 7.2, is that what you're reading from, where it says, if there are preliminary steps that would have to be followed under state law before a lawsuit could be commenced, such as mediation, those steps must be followed before arbitration can begin, et cetera?
That's one instance. However, there is express language that indicates does not constitute waiver of arbitration. And
that sentence continues and says does not constitute. But is it only in that agreement or is it in others? I didn't.
I believe it's just in that one agreement. It's in all four. It's in all four. I stand corrected.
Okay.
And that's an important fact because it getting to this latches argument, it manifests an intent by Lennar to, consistent with Gonski, participate in the mandatory pre-litigation requirements of Chapter 40 and reserves manifestly its right thereafter to seek to enforce the arbitration provision. Interestingly, if Lennar were to take the position that Chapter 40 did not apply and that it was going to go straight to arbitration, imagine what the homebuyers would say in that instance. So, damned if you do, damned if you don't. In this instance, in these two cases, Lennar tried to abide by this court's holding in Gonski, tried to comply in good faith with its obligations as a developer contractor under Chapter 40, while all along, if it didn't settle, intending to shift the forum from district court to an arbitration setting. Again, none of the rights and remedies afforded the home buyers were limited or abrogated. And that brings me to a comment council made indicating that there were these cost-shifting provisions. What was not read, but what is in the record, is in the agreements, is a catch-all, if you will, that says to the maximum extent permitted by law. So implicit in that, if not, you know, manifest in that, is that to the extent allowable by Chapter 40 or otherwise, this is the way the parties would like it done. But if it flies in the face of Chapter 40 or this court's interpretation of Chapter 40, an impermissible cost-shifting provision like the one in Gonski, I believe, Gonski or Birch, that's not the case.
So Mr. Shinnick is making a point that your contract, at least one version of it, would have his clients be saddled with the expense of contesting the arbitration clause if they lose. He makes that point. Do you concede that, as a matter of law, that would be inappropriate? Or are you saying that that savings clause, to the extent allowed by law, leaves it for later determination by either the court or the arbitrator? What's your point on that?
Lennar does not concede that point, Justice Pickering. The catch-all indicates that when you apply all of the agreement, looking at it as a whole, that would not occur. Additionally,
unless it's allowed by law.
Correct.
So if it's not allowed by law, then it's off the table.
Precisely.
Okay.
Moreover, let's just assume for argument's sake that the home buyers did have to come out of pocket and pay that expense, and that Mr. Shinnick didn't do it. Chapter 40 entitles the home buyer to fees, costs, interest, albios, interest on all that. So would there be any difference? At the end of the day, the Lennar agreements do not limit or abrogate the rights that, assuming they prove up their case, the home buyer otherwise would have. So if they had to front the money for Mr. Shinnick or out of their own pocket, if they prevail, at the end of the day, they would be awarded those same costs and interest on those costs. That's the intent. That is the unambiguous reading from the
perspective. But if they lose, then the costs and fees are shifted to them.
Which would be the case in any event under other provisions of the Nevada Revised Statute, and if there was an offer of judgment made, same circumstances, even if they did prevail.
Depending on whether that applies in arbitration, too.
Well, Nora's position is that no state law, whether it's an offer, a compromise, whether it's Chapter 40 or any other NRS 38, is impacted such that it would prevent the home buyers from seeking damages in the arbitration that they otherwise would be entitled to in state court. Let me try and say that more clearly. These agreements, all four of them, if you take out the offensive language about waiving Chapter 40 entitlements, are intended merely as a form-shifting provision. Let's do it in arbitration, not in state court. Plaintiffs are going to get whatever they were entitled to get, assuming they prove their case, in arbitration as if they were in district court. It's that simple. And these home buyers were put on notice both by the language, its size, its font, its boldness, front page, and by the fact that the Lennar representatives walked these home buyers through it. This case is distinguishable in key material ways from the other cases that have been cited by petitioner or respondent. Let me shift gears and focus back on the Horizons or Macedo case and the latches and waiver, because in each instance there has to be a showing that somehow the failure to act, the latches, disadvantaged the home buyer. And there is, the record does not suggest that. The parties were engaged in Chapter 40. There were a series of mediations. There was an exchange of documents, all the normal Chapter 40 stuff that would have necessarily occurred whether it was in district court or arbitration. So none of that activity was wasted. It wasn't as if once the Chapter 40 process concluded and the court compelled arbitration, the etch-a-sketch was shaken and we started with a clean slate. No. The plaintiffs are homeowners. They have the burden of proof as plaintiffs. They have to get expert reports, expert costs of repair. They have to meet their initial burden. Everything that was undertaken during the Chapter 40 process was necessary for them to prevail in their case in chief, whether in district court or arbitration. So the district court erred when it found when it said it supported plaintiff's argument that, or respondent's argument, that it was prejudiced because of this duplication of costs and effort. It should be apparent to this court that that's not the case.
What about the separation of the causes of action? That seems to be one of the things that Judge Flanagan relied on, is that up until the point that the motion to compel was filed, the plaintiffs were proceeding essentially as a group of plaintiffs as opposed to each individual plaintiff now having to go forward in arbitration. Certainly that's a duplicative cost, an excess cost.
Respectfully, Your Honor, two responses. The case law, the Dean Witter case, says that mere duplication, inefficiency, should not be a consideration. Let's assume...
Are you talking about Howsam?
Excuse me?
The Howsam case? Dean Witter, what case is Dean Witter?
Dean Witter, the site is... U.S. 213. There's also a case, Rush versus Oppenheimer, 779 F. 2nd, 885, 2nd District Court, 1985. And that latter case stands for this proposition that prejudice only occurs when there is discovery that's utilized that's not otherwise available in the arbitration. The AAA rules clearly provide for everything that was undertaken at the district court level. But getting back to, I forgot to discuss the second aspect of your question, Chief Justice Seda. These are single-family homes, not condos, not apartments. And so necessarily, each home is going to be presented with its own cost of repair because it's unique. The defects are unique to that home, and there's really no other way practically to do it. And so there would not be a duplication, respectfully, of effort because it wasn't an omnibus cost of repair. Sure, there was a total at the end of the document, but each home was itemized by defect and by home but with an individual cost. And that's the only way to do it.
And I correct myself. The order is not signed by Judge Flanagan. My colleague pointed out to me it's Judge Adams, so my apologies for placing blame or credit where it was not entitled to be placed.
The other point made by the district court in denying the motion to compel arbitration was that there was prejudice because Lennar had litigated substantial issues on the merits. No, there was nothing was litigated on the merits. Nothing. We filed an answer. We filed a third-party complaint in an effort to...
You were moved to federal court and back again, right?
Well,
you didn't come back.
Yes, it was remanded back, and we filed a third-party complaint in an effort, as part of the Chapter 40 process, to implicate the insurance policies of the subcontractors. It was never served. It was later withdrawn. There was no availment of the litigation machinery. Nothing was litigated on the merits. And this notion of duplication of efforts, I would suggest to this court there was no duplication because everything that was undertaken during the Chapter 40 process was a necessary component of the homebuyer's case in chief. And in order to meet their burden, they had to rely on that information. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schumacher. And I will give you 1 minute in rebuttal, which means, Mr. Shinnick, I will also add an additional 1 minute to your argument here.
Thank you.
Welcome.
So you have 14, 13, 15 minus
we'll
two plus
way
one.
Too much math today, but at any rate, yes.
Okay. Let me address the waiver issue first, since that was the stated issue by the trial court, Judge Adams. In terms of a request for arbitration or notice of arbitration, it's useful to look at when they did not request arbitration. They did not request arbitration when they got 100 notices of claims. When Lennar sent us 100 requests for responses to inspect these homes, no mention of requesting arbitration. When Lennar did the inspections and then sent another 100 responses saying, we've looked at it and we disagree with everything, not a word about arbitration in there. When we filed the complaint and Lennar answered, there's not anything in their answer about arbitration. We think
so no affirmative defense.
Defense on arbitration. When we did the first case management order in late 2011-2012, nothing in that negotiations with the special master about, oh, this really got to go to arbitration under some purchase and sale contract. Then we did an amended complaint that filed an answer to the amended complaint. Nothing in there about requesting arbitration. Then we started producing documents, so homeowner documents, repair documents, expert documents. Lennar was also producing their documents, contracts, other kinds of things like that. Nothing in that during that time period about requesting arbitration. Then we went out and did joint destructive testing, their experts along with our experts. A total of 33 days of expert inspections in this case, top to bottom in terms of these homes. Is there a letter in there from them saying, okay, but make sure everybody understands this is for arbitration? Nothing. Radio silence. Nothing. We did the Chapter 40 mediation. Is there anything in the Chapter 40 mediation? Nothing that I can tell that discussed arbitration or arbitration as a request. There were three more mediations during 2013, basically mediations to try to settle the case on the merits. By that time, they had figured out that there was no point in filing a third-party complaint against the subcontractors because it's a wrap insurance situation. They're not going to be involved. And we tried to settle a case three times. And what is our reward for supplying all the information, for providing the open inspections, for providing $288,000 worth of expert investigation? Our reward is a motion to compel arbitration in December of 2013, nearly 4 years after the initial Chapter 40 notices.
Your position, though, is that to the extent Lennar would have said our arbitrations pull the rug out from under your Chapter 40 pre-litigation process, you would have said, no, they don't. That's unconscionable.
We would have said that on the agreement itself.
Right. Well, so up to the point of the court activity, they were following what would be your legal position, which is Chapter 40 applies regardless of the arbitration agreement, correct?
Our position is that Chapter 40 does apply.
And that arbitration cannot dispense with or dispatch or eliminate Chapter 40's pre-litigation stuff.
Chapter 40 is required only if we file an action in the court system.
Right. But you say that has to be done regardless of whether you're in court or in arbitration, right?
I do not say that.
Okay.
If in terms of arbitration, if the case goes to arbitration, if there's a valid arbitration clause.
Right. Say there is.
And the case goes to arbitration, mm-hmm. Chapter 40 need not be complied with.
So you then are saying that you can have an arbitration clause that would kick the slats out from under all of Chapter 40?
No, what I'm saying is you can have an arbitration clause if it preserves all statutory rights under Chapter 40. All statutory rights. If someone, in the example, this came up, and again, there's about a dozen of these Lenar arguments.
So you would like to not have to do the pre-Chapter 40 stuff, so that's okay with you if the arbitration clause dispenses with that, but it's not okay if it dispenses with homeowner protective measures?
The example is the AT&T versus Conception case.
Okay.
Where it said, we're not going to use class action, can't have that, but we'll give you every right and remedy you have under law. And you won't be required to pay any of AT&T's legal fees.
Right.
And we'll give you a minimum award if you beat our best offer.
Right.
And you get your attorney's fees. If there's an arbitration in a sales contract for a house that says you're allowed to recover all the damages allowed under Chapter 40, but we're going to do it in an arbitration rather than in the court system, that is probably a conscionable agreement, all other things being satisfied.
Okay, your answer to my question is the pre-Chapter 40 activities or the pre-litigation activities that Chapter 40 mandates, you file a complaint and then they have to go through this inspection process and so on, that would not be required in arbitration?
Not if that arbitration, that's the terms of that arbitration. I think this ties in with this comment about their challenge between whether to go through Chapter 40 or whether to rely on the arbitration provision. That state law provision is only in version one of these four, despite what we just heard a moment ago. It is only in version number one. So that part of it that sort of recognizes that there may have to be some state law steps undertaken before the arbitration happens.
So the no waiver clause you're saying is only in one version?
Only in version one.
Okay.
The 16-page, only in that version. But that is their choice. In a way, Chapter 40 exists. It's a statutory right. If they wanted to recognize it, if some benevolent or well-spirited developer wanted to recognize the Chapter 40 rights and remedies and allow the recoveries, but do it in an arbitration forum, where it truly is just shifting the forum to what the FAA is intended to, go from a court system to the FAA, instead of using that arbitration language to destroy the homeowner's Chapter 40 rights, which is what these agreements do. That would be the difference. The question of prejudice is an element also in the waiver. The prejudice is an investigation that truly was a joint investigation of 100 homes, where the inspections could be done, where a single set of reports could be produced, the line items for cost estimates, which are not required under Chapter 40, could be produced. That's going to have to be redone. Now, we'll be able to salvage some of that work. You'll be able to salvage photographs and inspection notes, but it's going to have to be redone, if not the full, $250,000, at least probably in the six figures to get that done. And it's clearly prejudice. But in addition to the dollar prejudice, it's the inherent delay. We were, everybody was on track for a Chapter 40 and a litigation process for 4 years. 4 years before this motion to compel hit us. That's time, that's the expense, that's just the automatic delay.
And to be clear, your position is until you got that motion to compel, there was not a hint, a demand, an affirmative defense, anything that suggested they were going to seek arbitration?
Nothing I can find.
What's in the contracts, and that's up for...
That's right. Well, and a lot of developers, even if they have arbitration agreements in the sale or terms in the sales agreements, do not enforce it.
Right. I mean, a lot of people don't like arbitration.
Well, that's right. Insurance adjusters don't like it. Horton doesn't like it. Pulte had their shot at Gonski, doesn't like it anymore. But just because a sales agreement has an arbitration term doesn't mean we think that's going to go to arbitration.
Right, fair enough.
From our point of view, this is, I don't want to overstate this too much, but at the motion to compel, this case was just about over, except for expert depositions and the trial. All that we have done up to that point, producing repair records, opening the homes for inspections, producing full reports, going through probably 8 months of mediations. Expert depositions have not been done, that's true. Sometimes homeowners get deposed, not always, maybe half the time. But from our point of view, with the exception of the expert depositions and trial, this case was about done. And
how much of that work will you be unable to use in the arbitration, if assuming there is one?
I expect we'll be able to use the basic photographs, inspection notes, and those things. The reports are going to have to be rewritten. They're going to have to be rewritten dealing with which homes were tested and which were not. It's going to tie in with the issue of extrapolation, how many of the homes need to be tested. If it indeed is one house, if indeed we take this literally, and Lennar says it's an enforceable agreement, we need to enforce 100 separate arbitrations. Are we going to have to test 100 homes? I mean, that's really the question that now this makes us face, a question that did not have to be faced before. And, of course, the expense and time involved in that would be enormous.
You could, of course, stipulate around those requirements, I presume.
Pardon?
You could stipulate around those requirements.
Stipulations are hard to come by sometimes, Your Honor.
When was the order entered in the district court that is the subject of this direct appeal? Was it before or after AT&T versus Conception?
I do not.
You don't know? Because there's been a lot of back and forth in the law on class action waivers. Or class arb waivers.
Yes. And I think somewhat responsive to that question, where the problem in AT&T Conception case was there was a California statute that, by its nature, could not be reconciled with the arbitration agreement.
Right.
And class actions were impermissible. And that statute was viewed as contradictory to the Arbitration Act, FAA, and therefore could not stand.
Right, and that law is binding on us.
Right.
I mean,
well, I think just to answer the question, Mr. Chair, I think the Conception's 2011, this order was entered in 14.
Okay, so you weren't, it wasn't operating on the premise that those were valid, yeah. Were invalid, I'm sorry.
Right. Before I lose a related point, again, Chapter 40 itself is not inherently contradictory with the Federal Arbitration Act. It's not an act that says you can never arbitrate a Chapter 40 claim, but the policy of Chapter 40 is a strong statute in Nevada. And the problem is, we talked about this today, it's supposed to be a purchase sale agreement that didn't even have arbitration in it, but it had all these things that strips out the Chapter 40 rights, no recovery of repairs or fees or costs or interest or none of that sort of stuff. Even without arbitration, my belief is that those terms will be unenforceable. Because they contradict basic statutory rights in Nevada. So now what they've done is taken terms like that, that remove those rights, and added to them an arbitration provision, a procedure that is, you know, very confusing. Sometimes they refer to HBW items. Sometimes they change the definition of qualifying of a defect to a qualifying defect. They've taken out the definition by statute. They've taken out, of course, the fees and costs issue. So they've done this in many different confusing ways. I started to hear in...
The arguments you make are interesting about the offense to substantive law. I can't quote which agreement does which, but let's say there's an offense to a substantive provision of Chapter 40 in this contract. Say you cannot get attorney's fees no matter what. Would that not be an issue if it were held to be arbitrable, if this agreement were held to be arbitrable? Would that issue not be for the arbitrator to say, does that contract provision so offend Nevada law that it is invalid and under our AAA rules or JAMS rules, we give you the right to get attorney's fees anyway? Why would that not be a legal issue like any other that should go to the arbitrator if you have a valid arbitration agreement?
I think it goes back to the uncertainty of what the rules are and therefore how confusing they are under the unconscionability terms. If we have to go through each of these different elements of the section and say, will the arbitrator rule this way on this one, that one on the other one, doesn't that go to how confusing and therefore how contradictory to Chapter 40 those provisions are? I heard counsel a few minutes ago say, well, we're not going to enforce the worst parts of these things. But how do we know how much that is? Are we going to have to be back here every 6 months or a year saying, is this so bad? Is this the win where they get their one-sided claim for fees on appeal? Is that so bad that we need to strike that one also? Or do we wait till the end? And I think that uncertainty is what contributes to the confusion.
May I ask one more question? Do you acknowledge that these agreements are governed by the FAA?
I think the FAA can be applicable. Well, let me back up. I do not, but I don't think it makes any difference whether they are or not. I do not.
So it's not a hill to die for you?
Pardon?
It's not a hill to die for you?
No, because the actual construction, as I state, the claim occurs only within Nevada. That's the construction. We're not saying the sale is defective. We're saying the construction that occurred is defective. That's not interstate commerce. Therefore, it's not FAA. On the other hand, it doesn't make any difference because both FAA and Nevada's policy in favor of arbitration say that you cannot enforce an unconscionable term.
Right. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schenick. Mr. Schumacher, in rebuttal.
Thank you
very much for your argument.
It's interesting. I believe I heard counsel say that that everything was almost done and they were ready to proceed to trial. Yet, in argument as to whether or not there was cost and duplication and wasted effort, it seemed like there was a different story. The reality is that a number of years have lapsed since those reports were authored. And they would need to be updated to reflect current costs of materials, current labor values, and whatnot. It's a normal course of every construction defect case. There is never, in my experience at least, one iteration of a report. They're updated, revised, and so on. This doctrine of latches. The district court.
Before you go there, do you dispute what Mr. Schenick said, that up until the time you filed your motion to compel, there was not a word in terms of suggesting you intended to demand arbitration?
We do dispute that. The contract language with which the
anything else out, besides the contract?
Yes, there was correspondence from myself.
Is that in the record?
I believe so. Is it? It may not be, candidly. But it was
if it
was
is, may
weeks
I
before.
Ask that that be supplemented?
Absolutely. If it's a part of the current existing record and you have it or will be able to provide it, please do so.
Okay. A record site.
But this notion that Lennar should have acted upon its rights and instead slept on its rights and therefore is precluded from asserting its right to arbitrate is inconsistent with the factual record. The case was stayed. The original complaint was filed pursuant to a subsection in Chapter 40, which entitled Mr. Schenick's office to file the complaint because some of the 100 or so homeowners were coming up on a statute of limitation. By operation of law that in the same section, the case was stayed until the Chapter 40 process was completed. So it was not 2 years. Yes, if you do the math from the date the complaint was filed through the date that the Chapter 40 process and the motion to compel occurred is about 2 years. But the case was stayed. And let me go through the timeline here. And I would refer the court to this record, 3JA000584.
I'm sorry, one more time, 3JA.
000584, and that is an email from myself memorializing the second aspect of the case that was stayed during that purported 2 year period. We had a standstill agreement while we were trying to mediate with Craig Meredith. So, indeed, Lennar was focused on engaging in this, what it called the early resolution process. There was a standstill agreement that was stipulated to by counsel. And we also had the statutory stay from the date the original complaint was filed up until the Chapter 40 process was completed. When the respondents filed their second amended complaint, they still had not completed the Chapter 40 process. So we're really dealing with a very narrow month or two period where Lennar arguably could have slept on its rights. And I would ask the court to look at that timeline. Also in the record is 3JA000586, and that was a declaration by myself at the district court outlining the course of events that occurred during the Chapter 40 process. And Lennar would argue that those actions in no way should be construed as either latches or a waiver.
Mr. Schumacher, you are out of time. If you'd like to make a concluding comment, you may do so.
I do. Thank you, Your Honor. The court should not, as a matter of public policy, issue a decision or find that any activity undertaken by a developer contractor in furtherance of Chapter 40, that it could be, those actions could be construed to be a waiver of any contractual right to arbitrate at a later date. Public policy encourages the Chapter 40 process because ideally it's supposed to end up in resolution, pre-litigation of these cases. Sometimes that doesn't happen, we know that. But nothing should be prejudicial to a developer contractor who engages in the Chapter 40 process, the Chapter 40 mediation, that would inure to their detriment later in terms of seeking to compel the arbitration. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Schoenig, Mr. Schumacher, your associate counsel, for your arguments here today, your briefs. This matter will stand submitted. We'll be in recess.